Sure. showed him in the logistics and the nuts and bolts of everyday life. Was he continuing always to go through the door that God was holding open for him? Was he continuing always in his mind saying, all things work together for good? We usually don't quote that verse until after the things happened. If they're good things to us, well, then that verse proves that I'm good with God and God is good with me today. For surely I know the plans I have for you. Plans for what? Plans for good. But has God only used the right actions for patriarchs? Has he used only the right actions in order to lead where they need to go? These spiritual fathers, these patriarchs and matriarchs and our spiritual mothers, has he used only their obedience? Has he used only their good? Has he used only their uprightness? So far, he's used their sins, their failures, and their mistakes as much as anything else, right? How many times has he told the beholder of the covenant when they've messed up and have not acted out of faith and have completely disobeyed him? How many times has he said, that's it, I'm taking this away from you. My covenant's never going to reach where I want it to go if I continue to give it to you. Has he done that yet? Jesus reading in Hebrews sounds nice. The author of Hebrews has a way of wanting to sum it all up, to put it all together. The author of Hebrews is almost like that one standing, at the end of the road less traveled, saying, this has made all the difference. Actually, the way from Abraham to Jacob has been a lot messier than straight through. We've been detoured how many times by Abraham, by Isaac, by Jacob, going in and out, in and out. It's a whole lot more complicated than what you said, because it looks straightforward, didn't it? Verse 17, we go from Abraham and straight through. And we forget where we've been, haven't we? It's not complicated on God's part. God called them, gave it to them, and said what? Live. No, do it. And he's the one that's taking it straight through. But Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it's a lot messier path, isn't it? Our spiritual lives are a lot more messy than neat, aren't they? It's who we are. I'm not sure that there's any better living illustration of what I'm talking about, except today when the covenant goes from a grandson very first great-grandson of the covenant. It teaches us that the 12 patriarchs of Israel are the next in line, but there is one of them in particular. So who do you think out of the 12 patriarchs of Israel, who does the one go to next? Joseph. Yeah. And actually, tell you the truth, technically, Joseph's never given the covenant. But Joseph is certainly used as a tool for God to keep the covenant on a straight path, even though the patriarch is going to take that same messy path. But Joseph is interesting. The Joseph story, depending on who you are, depending on how you look at it, Western ideals, the way that we've always seen it, the way that most Protestants and Stism have seen it, if you were to sum up the Joseph story in just one category, you would say that Joseph remained faithful, and since he remained faithful, he is what? He is blessed. He has been blessed with the covenant. Eastern thought, or Hebrew thought, or biblical thought looks at it a whole different way. They look at it as Joseph is the one who takes care of his family. And that's what this is supposed to be about. It's about the family. Because biblically, exegetically, how is God going to find a way to fulfill the posterity part of the covenant? The posterity part of the covenant is after he says, those who curse you, I will curse. Those who bless you, I will curse. The next part is, you and your seed, Abraham, shall remain forever. And all the nations of the world will be blessed by you becoming a great nation. no secret of it. As a matter of fact, he clothed Joseph in full color advertising that he is daddy's favorite. So how popular is Joseph with his brothers? When his brothers saw their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably to him. Hebrew actually says they could not say a kind word about him at all. They hate him, and they've got no qualms showing it. Hey, by the way, do these guys know how to hate? That's the Hivites. Remember, the Hivites were the place where their sister was taken by the son of the king of the Hivites. You can't have her unless you become circumcised, and everybody becomes circumcised. While they were trying to heal from their circumcision, Simeon and Levi pick up their sword, and what do? To the entire nation of the Hivites? They kill every man. So does Joseph have a reason to be afraid? He should. But like all 17-year-olds, is he thinking about it? That is one thing I can tell you, that when I was 17, I was going to live how long? I was going to live forever. Every 17-year-old is going to live forever. We had a t-shirt. We had a t-shirt that a bunch of guys in my class, my graduating class, had that literally said, go to world, I'm a senior. Piss off everybody. 17-year-old's going to live forever. And there isn't anything anybody's going to do anything about it. So, Joseph, being the thoughtful patriarch and making that you are, you'd think he'd lay low. Try not to exacerbate the situation. Do anything to placate these angry brothers, right? Remember when I asked how much is he enjoying being daddy's favorite? How much is he enjoying being a tattletale? Well, he had a dream once, and he told it to his brothers, and they what? And they hated him even what? Even more. Because now he's telling them, not only my daddy's favorite, but God's favorite. Because God has given me dreams now. And guess what the dreams are? Guess what they are, he says. Listen to this dream that I dreamed. There we were. Binding sheaves in the field, suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, and your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf. Dear, let me ask you something. Is there any reason when the gods are on earth that he had to tell them that dream? Was there any reason to do so? Would it do them any good? There's only one reason to tell him. He's 17. He had to tell him. Knowing how your brothers already feel about you, he puts on the daddy loves me more than you billboard, walks out to him and says, let me tell you about this dream that I had. God's will in all this? Is he being a good witness? His brother said to him, are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to have dominion over us? So they hated him how much? Even more, because of his dreams and his words. Yes. That was such a hit. Let's do it again. Yet another dream. And first people he tells is his brothers. Saying, look, I got another dream. The sun, the moon, and 11 stars were all bowing down to me. When he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, what kind of dream is this that you've had? Shall we indeed come, I and your mother and your brothers, and bow down to the ground before you? Even Dad is real thrilled about this one, right? Same question. He need to tell him. Did God tell him? I'm going to give you this dream, Joseph, and I want you to go tell everybody. jealousy, even hatred for each other. And let's not forget about the parenting. Favoritism, dysfunctional. These days, you might even call Jacob what? Abusive. Trauma-informed parenting is a perfect example of Jacob here. So if we stop right here, and we're standing at the road, at the two roads diverging, can you see God's plan in all of this? I mean, we know the story, don't we? But if we didn't know the story, if we're at the beginning, and the two roads are here, are you sure you know what God's plan is right now? Are you sure which door he's opening and closing? Are you sure which road we should take? And the guy that is after he loses his temper a little bit with Joseph, he goes home, and he thinks about it a little bit. So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. I like that. I like that Jacob at least had enough to be able to go home and think about it. Because his son is having dreams. Jacob have anything to do with dreams? How does Jacob know which one is going to take the covenant? How is Jacob ever to know that? How did Jacob get the covenant? God came to him in one in a dream. So Jacob keeps the matter in mind. This is why he's really ticked that the new prayer thinks that I'm going to fall down and worship him. But he's having that he assigns him again. Go see if it's well with your brothers, and with the flock, and bring word back to me. So now we know at least why Joseph is attached to him, right? Jacob is the one sending him to do it. He's the one that has done this. And he goes out to find them, and they saw him from a what? From a distance. And before he came near to them, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Here comes this dreamer. They have a plan. By the way, they're supposed to do. They're living in Shechem. From around the valley of Hebron. They're not living in Shechem. They're living in the valley of Hebron. It says in the verse that Jacob sent him to Shechem. And in the fields around Shechem, Joseph gets there. He's just wandering around. He can't find them. And a stranger is standing there. He says, I'm looking for my brothers. And the stranger says, I heard them talking. They're at Dothan. They're nearly 40 miles away. Sometimes I think it's a little more insidious. I don't think they came up with a plan to kill him. While he was walking out there, they got further and further away from Hebron. Why? Get Joseph further and further away from his only protection, which is him, his father. They've already planned this. Scripture is making it vomit on it. They've already planned this. The distance gives them time. So they say, come, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits, and we shall say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we shall see what becomes of his dreams. See, God is going to get Joseph to Egypt. He's going to use his brother's hatred to put him there. Now, jealousy, murder, sibling rivalry, abusive parenting, all of these things, is that God's will? Is that God's plan? But one of the things that the covenant tells me is that, no, I don't believe that any of that is in God's plan. There are a whole bunch of laws written that God says, I don't want you doing any of this. But here the patriarchs are living it, here they are doing it. I'm here to tell you that what's been pointed out to me is that if this is all I'm going to give God, he's going to use it. If all I'm going to give him is my selfishness, if all I'm going to give him is my sin, my nature, constantly giving in,
if all I'm going to give him is my hatred for my brother, then he's going to use it. And did you see God's will in all of this? Not if you're only looking at it through their eyes. But the covenant, supposed to be, is not meant to look at it only through their eyes. We're supposed to be looking at it through whose eyes? We're supposed to have faith. I don't believe that any of this is reasonable. So they can see God a little bit in it, and it may change their minds. Reuben talks them into not killing him, but what? Let's just toss him in here. Let's just toss him in the pit. And Reuben says, God, and the scripture actually says it's because Reuben wants to play the hero. He said, let's tell them that he's in this pit. Reuben said, and he said to himself, he said, I'm going to go get him later, and I'll take him to Jacob, and Jacob's going to dig me because I brought him his favorite son back. The plan doesn't get that far. They see Ishmaelite traitors, and they say, let's do this instead of kill him. Let's what? Let's sell him into slavery. See, when we see all of this, see it being used, it doesn't mean that God isn't in control. Sometimes there won't be any signs that God is still sovereign, that he's still there. We've all asked at one time or another, we've all wondered at one time or another if God is still one. If he's still there. If he's still on your throne. Are you still sovereign in our world? World is spinning off its hinges. The only sense you can make of it is to just have faith that God indeed is in control. And maybe it doesn't behoove me, maybe it doesn't benefit me to try to sit and find exactly where. Because then all I'm doing is shifting, is sifting through my anger, and sifting through my resentment, and sifting through the horror and the terror of this world. Absolutely certain that this is God's will, if you are absolutely certain that this is what's going to happen, if you are absolutely certain that this cannot be, will not be ever God's will, that's not faith. The unity of faith is certainty. Because faith is defined as hope in things not hoped, not seen, not known, not for certain. See, we know that the plan is to have Joseph in Egypt. But why is he a slave? Why does this have to be forced? We'll talk about what they will give him, what they will give God, and what they won't. Joseph, number one, he's too loyal to leave. He's not just going to leave on his own. Why not come to him the way he came to his great-grandfather and say, leave your family behind. Go to the place that I will tell you why. I have to assume it's because he won't do it. He absolutely will not do it. So God says, I can't treat him the way that I treated his great-grandfather. He's too loyal to leave. He might be too selfish to leave. Why leave this? What might Joseph need here? He may need a dose of humility in order to be able to lead the way that he needs him to lead. It could be because next time we see him, we hardly recognize him. Get ahead and move ahead to see him. We don't even hardly recognize this kid at all anymore. Joseph was taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him. He made him overseer of his house, put him in charge of how much of what he had. All that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and with him there had no concern for anything but the food that they ate. And by the way, Joseph wasn't eaten. He was a mucker. He was easy on the eyes, ladies. But this is our teenage walking advertisement for adolescent self-indulgence. Remember, he's not wearing the coat anymore, is he? He was stripped of it. He was thrown naked in the back of the slave trader's van. He feared for his life that entire journey, wondering what would happen to him. What do you say that this world is beautiful? Because man is the difference here. Some things happen to him, but it isn't something that he decided to do. It isn't something that he looked up and said, I think I need to be a better person. I think I need to grow up. But we know what the narrative describes this metamorphosis to. The Lord was with him. The Lord was with Joseph. And he became a successful man. He was in the house of his Egyptian master. Let me ask you, where did he have to turn in that way? His older brothers, the ones who were supposed to take care of him, they're the ones that threw him in it. His father is kilometers away, miles away from protection. Who does he else have to turn to? He doesn't even have his coat. In the hands of a slave trader, who does he have to turn to? To Israel's God. Jacob taught him where to go. He was taught to wrestle, to contend, to know that God. So at least he's beginning down the path of faith. God will have faith to be able to tell us how well he's doing. After a time, his master's wife touched her eyes on Joseph and said, I love you. Fears me. What would most 17-year-olds do? Who are complete charge of the house? Well, listen to our man here. How late is that 17-year-old man? He refused and said to his master's wife, look, with me here, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my hand. He's not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And Joseph's master took him and put him in where? Put him in prison. What happened was that his wife came and told Potiphar all about it. She lies and says that he tried to assault her. What's really interesting is, did Potiphar believe it? I don't think so. He said, well, great, and threw him in prison. Yeah, but what should he have done? You have a Hebrew slave who you've given everything to, and he assaults your wife. You are the head of all Pharaoh's guard. You are a soldier of soldiers. You're an assassin. What should he have done? I think going to prison was Potiphar's way of saying, I think you're right, but, you know, I got to do something. This guy's got to get ready, right? No, apparently slavery wasn't enough. Now he's an imprisoned slave. He put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But he remained there where? He remained in prison. So who's in charge? So if you're a slave, someone else is in charge of you. If you're in prison, someone else is in charge of you. But Joseph doesn't see it that way. He sees being in prison probably, I don't know, as easier than being a slave was, but I'm not 100% sure. But the Lord was with Joseph, showed him steadfast love, and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. This is how he knows. It's the only way that he's able to know is that he's finding his way in favor of the men who are in charge of him. God's not found in favor with the jailer. He's put him in charge. Remember, Joseph has to get to a position of power in Egypt in order for the posterity part of the covenant to be able to begin to be fulfilled. Was Potiphar, who's being Potiphar's slave, going to let that happen? Absolutely not, right? God has to get him out of the household where he's a slave. He needs to get him in positions of power. Well, the prison that Potiphar happened to throw him into were reserved for Pharaoh's prisoners and were reserved for people who acted against Pharaoh. Where's he taking Joseph closer to? Closer to the palace. I'm not 100% sure that I could see it that way. I'm not 100% sure that I would say, well, wait a minute, I was loyal. I did everything that I could. I turned the life down. I did what was right. And now I'm a prisoner. This is it. The way that I would see it. Taking this road is not working out. But God is finding his way to be able to do it. A little later, sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker offended their lord, the king of Egypt. The cupbearer and the baker worked for who? Work for Pharaoh. And who's in charge of them? Joseph is. And what's the one thing that Joseph can do for these guys? What's the one thing that he can do for them? What do they really need? Pharaoh said to Joseph, I missed it. It said in verse 8, I'm sorry, I don't have it for you. In verse 8 it says, we've had dreams. There's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? And then I have to hear the squeal in his voice. Tell them to me. Dog, something I really know how to do. Here comes this one. Here comes this dreamer. I was made for this day. That road is working out. Tell them to me. Interpreted them. And a lot of them, in a long way around, gets them to actually meet who? Pharaoh. Because Pharaoh's dreaming next, and guess what? Bingo. He finds out that this prisoner is an interpreter of dreams. So Pharaoh finds him. Guess what? The road is now brought from Joseph where he needs to be. He now meets who? And he now meets Pharaoh. And we remember Pharaoh's dream. Seven good ears of corn, seven fat, sleek cows, and then they get eaten by bad ears of corn and bad sleek cows. And Joseph tells him, he interprets it, he says, hey, seven years of good is what we're in right now, but there's 7 years of bad coming. And not only does Joseph interpret it, he also has a plan for all of this. He says, let's save one-fifth in the good years, set it aside, and then we'll be okay. Notice that's where the plan stops right now. That's where it is. If the bad isn't there yet, at least he's given it a plan. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is no one so discerning and as wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only with regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over how much of the land of Egypt? Also look at God's austerity part with the covenant. Straight line. The way Joseph sees it is one. Right here, what would anybody else be tempted to do with this kind of terror? What God does in this man's life puts him in charge. 7 bad years come, remember, and when they do, they find out that not only are they there to feed Pharaoh, because the original plan was, let's save up so we can eat. Those of us in the courtyard, and, you know, in court of the Pharaoh, it's us. But they find out that the whole world is going to be able to be fed because of Joseph's plan. Everybody will be coming in these 7 years of bad. Because when Pharaoh put him in charge of all of Egypt, he gave him everything. And a man of power, and a man who would be able to have. Joseph not big enough. The kid, what would a kid have done with these kind of power that you don't even recognize? Before the years of famine came, Joseph had two sons, Manasseh and the daughter of Potiphar, priest of Moab, born to him. His father-in-law is now the high priest of the God of Moab. The priest of Moab is the ancient city of Heliopolis. Do you know yet what better than that? The Potiphar, head of all the Pharaoh's guard, but the main Egyptian god in the pantheon, too, is the son. This guy, this priest. Joseph goes when it comes to forgiving and forgetting. He named his kids forgive and what? And forget. When he named them that, I don't think he ever thought he was going to see them again. Because he said, he made me forget my father's whole one. My father's whole one. But for one of the reasons is that he doesn't think there's any damage or something like that. Not everything that's happened. So we let go, we let God forgive and forget. It can only happen when we're able to give it to Him. What's interesting is, as soon as He names His kids forgive and forget, God says, let's see how much you mean it. His gift shows up. Those brothers, one is one. All of them show up. Starts with one of the funniest lines I have in the Bible. Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt. He said to his sons, why do you keep looking at one another? Jacob's in a whole crotchety. Grandpa sitting in his chair. They're all getting ready to starve. And the boys are sitting around doing what? Just staring at each other. What are you guys doing? Why are you just sitting there staring at each other? I love that picture. I love that we all get crotchety. I heard, he said, there's grain in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there that we may live and not die. So the first trip, they take Benjamin. They don't take Benjamin. They come to Joseph and they bow down to him. And when Joseph sees him, does he forgive and forget? No, he says, he remembers what? He remembers the dreams. What were the dreams? That they would come and they would what? And they would bow before him. Here it is, the fulfillment of the dream, right there. What would you be tempted to do? What he decides to do says, you're spies. You've come to see the nakedness of the land. There's no way there's a family this big. There's no way you guys are all related. You're an army. You're an army of spies, and you've come to check us out. He knows who they are. And you can look at this in beautiful ways. Has he forgiven them? I'm not 100% sure, because what does he do with them after this? Throws him in where? He throws him into prison. Right? He throws him into prison. And the way that it goes is that after 3 days, he says, go back home and I'll believe you if you bring back what? I'll believe you if you bring back that other brother that you told me about. Bring me Benjamin. Bring me my little brother. That's what he's saying in his head. But when Joseph sees him, he's almost overwhelmed when he first sees him. And it says he falls on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept while Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. It all happens after weeks and months, probably, of his journey going back and forth, imprisoning all of them, imprisoning Simeon. He tortured them. I believe he actually psychologically tortured them, remember? Accusing them of stealing, he put his cup in Judah's bag. He gave them their money back when they got home and found out they had their money. They all think that there's sorcery going on. Says, I told you so, to remind him of his dream. He certainly didn't tell Jacob that, did he? And he did it as a slave. He did it as a prisoner. He did it as a slave again until God delivered him from him. Love, forgiveness, faith. Let me ask you, do you have as much to forgive in your life with others as Joseph did? Some of us do. Some of us don't. But we all need to work. We all need to forgive. And we can't do it without God's forgiveness. But thank God, His forgiveness comes first. The covenant comes first. Not Joseph turning into a man in order for God to be with him. God was with the arrogant, self-centered teenager as much as He was with the selfless ruler of all Egypt, feeding poor and hungry of the entire world. Trial, tribulation, suffering. The last thing we want to say is that that's good for us. But look what it does. Look what it can be in God's hands. Jesus told His disciples, He told the Father when they let the disciples listen. He says, I don't want you to take them out of the world. I don't want you to prevent them from ever suffering hardship. I don't want you to prevent them from ever suffering sickness. All I want you to do is to let them know that you are with them. We're not taking out of the world. We just don't go through it alone. Which, by the way, when Jesus went back to heaven, that became your and my job. We all suffer. Our job is to make sure that no one does it wrong. And no one does it wrong. And as hardship makes me more humble, makes me more authentic, that's how I approach other people, no matter who they are. Either they worship God, the living God, or whether they worship the God of the sun. God allows me to step in. God who said, light will shine out of darkness, who shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. But, he says, we have this treasure. We have the entire covenant and all the riches of the covenant. We have all of it. We have it in one. We have it in three jars. So that it may be made clear that this extraordinary power belongs to God. Will be someday, but it isn't now. That's the magic of the covenant within. That's the grace. That's the love. That's the peace. He doesn't hold back waiting for the clay to turn to gold. He doesn't hold back waiting for the ignorant teenager, the selfish teenager, to become the man. He doesn't wait for you and I to. He doesn't treat us. Because one day we'll be perfect. He treats us who we are now. He fills this jar, this clay jar, this faulty clay jar with cracks, and destruction, and death, and decay, and everything. But he gives all the blessings of the covenant within it. We have this treasure. Not willing, not promised. We will. Absolute certainty of what the prophecy is. We don't tell it from the beginning. We don't tell it even there. We tell it after it happens. This story, all of our story, we may not be able to tell what it is from the kingdom. Tell on the other side of the kingdom. During the millennium, we're not going to walk in and say, well, Lord, you don't have to cover this part of my life because I am absolutely sure what